without end. So it's like very difficult to manage. I totally get it. It's been so long actually since I've actually, since anyone's actually paid me a salary, right? It's coming up to a decade since the last time I had a job. I've forgotten what it's like to turn up as the new person and then, you know, have to integrate and have to, you know, quickly get up to speed and stuff like this. So this is going to be a fascinating show for me to learn from, actually. So yeah. Anyway, we're live, everybody. We're live with Brain Food Live on air, bringing it to you every Friday. Every Friday we're doing this. So hopefully we're going to have a fantastic conversation. We've got really, like, lots of people, like, really switch on to this this topic title, because I think with the recruitment market being as crazy as it is, there's a lot of us that have either recently moved jobs or are thinking about doing so. And now I think, hey, we have to get those first 3 months right, because if you're going to do it well, let's land it properly. And I think a lot of people are going to be looking at the folks that we've got on the show to help share some insight and drop some knowledge on us. So it's going to be great. Anyway, just a quick one for actually a quick sound check, folks, because we always got to do this now that we're back to multicasting across various channels. Crowdcast, just a quick check, folks. If you're on Crowdcast, can you hear me okay? They're not paying attention to us, Christine. Have you noticed? They're chatting each other up on the chat stream. That's fine.
That's great.
But can you stop chatting with each other and just say, yes, Hung, you can hear me? Because that would be good to know. We are also live streaming, I believe, on LinkedIn. That's not failed for a little while, so I'm pretty confident there. But it would be good at least for you to tell me whether you can hear me okay on LinkedIn. So if you're watching my LinkedIn live right now, just let me know. Can you hear me okay? Give me a thumbs up. And we should, I hope to God, we're on Facebook as well. I've pre-scheduled that, so maybe it isn't. But if you can hear me on Facebook, let me know. It'd be good to know. Okay, cool. And Periscope are firing off, but no one actually watches it on there. I just do it for nostalgia reasons. I like to do it because it's like, it's my Twitter profile, and it's like, yeah, sure, I want to just show I'm actually, you can still video through this. Okay, cool. Quick word to our sponsors this week. Thank you so much to our sponsors, Owly by AMS. I love the fact that Alexander Mann Solutions are producing technology. And they produce a new product, I think, in direct addressal to their client needs, essentially to handle and improve candidate experience. So they set up this product called Owly. I think it's designed initially for the on-demand hourly labor force. So if you're hiring people in retail, in food retail and stuff like that, this is the perfect app for you to try, especially if you wanted to kind of interact with people quickly and not force them to get in front of a screen or force them in front of a keyboard. So check out Owly. I think they are I haven't checked out this product, but this is not an insignificant gamble by the guys at AMS. And I think ultimately the company is going to put a decent investment into this type of product and indeed other products, because basically they have to. I think the future of this type of technology, this type of business, is going to be a combo of people and technology. Anyway, cool. Delighted to welcome Christine Ng back. Have you sorted your banking? Is it now Christine Ng or is it Christine Ng?
Oh my God, yeah, it's Ng. It's still Ng. So for context, for those of you that don't follow me on Twitter, I started a new role as well. And for my payroll purposes, we use Sage as our payroll provider. And my surname is Ng, spelled N-G, two characters only. And Sage wouldn't let me submit my payroll through because they thought my surname was too short. So thanks, Hung, for retweeting it. That was really insightful. I think loads of people retweeted. Someone tagged the CEO of Sage as well. So I think that helped escalate it. And I think someone from the product team came back to me and just said, oh, just put a space after my name. And then it
worked. Right, yeah.
So that worked. So I got Sage.
It's a quick hack, but I mean, it's also a sign of like one of those small onboarding issues. You know what I mean? We talk a lot about DE&I, and that's going to be a big part of this conversation, by the way. Like, how do you actually make sure this happens? And if you're a recruiter entering your new job for the first time, you actually will encounter these episodes for your own onboarding that you may think, you know what, I got to feed that back into how we recruit, because that's like, I mean, I know you don't really give a damn that much, Christine. Mm. But it's a signal of lack of inclusion there. But
for sure.
The signal that, you know, that's not an acceptable name. Like, it must not be true. I have this problem with my first name. because obviously Hung is kind of stupid, right? You know, transliteration doesn't work. And basically, sometimes that doesn't get accepted as a name. They're saying, are you joking? no. I'm like, what do you want me to do? I can't misspell this. Anyway, small gripes. So, Christine, for the people who don't know you, like, who are you? What it is you do now? Because you got a new job.
Yeah, so I suppose last time you would have met me here, I was still at Financial Times. 4 weeks ago, I joined a small quantum computing startup as their head of talent and media. So 4 weeks in, still brand new. So I'll really resonate and actually learn a lot from our speakers today. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's really cool. And actually, I think you're quite experienced as a new starter. And I mean that in the right way. You're not a job hopper. But you've had a couple of companies and you kind of go in, you do 2, 3, 4 years, that kind of good stint, and then you start again. So each time you've had a reasonable kind of feeling on it. So it's going to be good to get your knowledge on this. Anyway, let's quickly review the newsletter as we always do. Did you read it last week, Christine? And if you did, what was interesting? If you didn't, what's your excuse, you know? That kind of thing.
Turns out I actually did, and then I deleted it, and then I had to get you to send me a link again. So I read it twice. Obviously, the main one that did resonate with me the most, of course, was the Twitter feed on how to build social capital with software developers. So I've since left that world, but you know, having worked in that space for the last 8 years, that really resonated with me. I thought, you know, it's so crucial as a tech recruiter to be able to speak the language, right? As if you're hiring developers on a day to day, at least differentiate between Java and JavaScript at a very simple level. But I think what I did, and also a lot of my team did in the past, is, you know, you throw yourselves in the deep end. Ideally, you want to mingle with the engineers, you want to go to their show and tells, go to their meetups, see what they're doing, and really understand, you know, their thought process. Where do they hang out? You know, where do they go and network? And that's where you want to really embed yourself, right? And that's how you can build your own brand and know, you know, where you should ultimately advertise and find your developers.
Yeah, and that was, I believe, the show before last. So what I'm going to try and do, folks, is that people have been criticizing me for failing to document the cool conversations we're having. So I'm trying to do that via Twitter threading. So after every Brain Food Live, I'm going to basically rewatch it, collate the information, try and cross-reference it with other examples. Then I'm going to tweet it out. And then I'm going to say, hey, listen, point to it in the newsletter. So, well, I'm going to do one for this, and I'm behind on the one from last week. But do check that out. It's a very cool thread. Okay, what else, Christine?
I think you alluded to this earlier today, but not only are companies struggling to attract talent, but we're now struggling to attract the talent to attract the talent. So, you know, there's a lot of shortage of recruiters in the market. I think that was really scary stats in the article that you shared. I think, what does that mean for us, you know? And I think even for me, when I accepted my current role, I had 2 or 3 other offers at the same time. And even speaking to people within my network, everyone's interviewing, everyone's getting poached. Every time we go on LinkedIn, there's always a new role. So what does this mean for the industry, right? Like, are we having to rely more on third-party agencies, you know, RPOs, et cetera? Like, how do you actually fill these roles? Well, or do you hire with someone junior at the end? You know, what is the strategy for the talent world moving forward?
RPOs are going crazy as well. I don't know whether you know, but every single one of those is like hiring like almost 100% of their size again. So it's like a really big push. And then you've got all kinds of agencies can't hire either. I mean, I'd be interested to know. I mean, for the people who are watching this now, are you getting offers? Are you getting tapped up by RecToRex? I mean, the poor RecToRex, they must be like, how many messages? They must be like banging out like thousands of messages and getting a lot of negative response, because quite frankly, everyone has these options. So anyway, Jan Tegze, our friend Jan Tegze, did a pretty interesting research. I think just searched on LinkedIn, you know, the numbers of people that call themselves recruiters and TA people. And apparently it's about 1 million. So there's 1 million profiles in the world, at least the English-speaking world, that uses LinkedIn. Bear in mind, of course, big territories that don't use LinkedIn a lot. No, Africa's China, Russia, even Latin America, not really big on LinkedIn. So we're talking North America, Europe, and Australasia kind of areas. India, of course, as well. But there's 1 million in that sort of group of people. I think we're going to have to offshore a bunch of jobs, is the truth. We're going to end up saying, right, we can do it, but you know, our sourcing team is in Manila or something.
Oh, for sure.
And we're going to do it that way. Yeah, there we go. John Rose, 31 requests from RPOs last 2 weeks. Ridiculous. Insanity. Okay, one more, Christine, before we dive into it.
Yeah, I'm always very bullish about TikTok. I just love consuming a lot of content, as you can tell. So it's actually your YouTube video. God, what's her name? Sniper Wolf. Yeah, very cool job for her to be a YouTuber and literally just watch TikTok videos all day and just commenting on what people do. I think the most impressive one is a guy that's like remixing different colors to match like his glove. I mean, that was so impressive. But that's literally what she does. Watches TikTok all day and comments on what people do. What a great life.
She's created her life for herself. So I think there's two examples why that's awesome. Because she's just a gamer, and she plays games and she twitched it out and all the rest of it. People followed her because she's a cool gamer. Then she started this YouTube channel, which is all just reaction videos. So imagine it's like so meta. She's just watching other people watching videos and commenting on it. She's one of the top, I think one of the top 20 YouTubers around, maybe the top woman actually. So she's really high up. She makes a lot of money, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But the job she has, I think is fascinating. Plus she did something last week, or at least the one I shared, which is super relevant to us, which is basically, oh, here's the jobs you can get. And I've seen it on TikTok. And it was just a collage of all these weird jobs that people can do. My favorite one was the boat post person.
The one who's like just running up and on. I mean, it's interesting, right? I mean, kind of things like thinking about your job board, Hung, you've got a ton of roles on there. Is the future that someone's going to be commenting on the jobs on your job board and picking out all the key ones, right?
That would not be a very successful YouTube channel, I would say.
Videos of talent jobs in the talent world.
Someone is welcome to do reaction video on Brain Food Live. That'd be quite funny. just heckle us and do a Google box on it. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, it's a really cool video. I think there's lots of ways. People are talking about jobs, even outside of our industry. You know, they're talking about what's happening in the world of jobs. So super interesting. Okay, let's dive into this topic because we're talking about first 100 days. So Christine, let's pick up where we were before we kind of launched this live. You were telling me actually one of the biggest problems you were having was this like overwhelming challenge of prioritizing between too much stuff that you have to learn. Like, how do you do that when you first enter into a company? Because there's never ending amount of things to know. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, so I think I definitely spent the first 4 weeks just talking to people, listening to people. It's only 20 people as well, so there's only a finite number of people I can speak to. But, you know, as we were saying, Hung, there's so many different things you can start to see emerge in patterns. You know, should you roll out an ATS? I see someone mentioned TikTok's ATS. Should we, implement an employee referral scheme? Should we, implement a bunch of stuff, right? So you just got to figure out what's the priorities and what's more important. But I think the reality is, I think for me, the first 30 days is really just managing expectations. Like, look, I'm still listening. I'm still in listening mode. I personally don't think I should be rolling anything out yet in the first 30 days until I kind of figure out where the high priorities are. You know, is our challenge actually on hiring, or is our challenges on, more kind of internal aspects? So really getting more data before I can make a decision on that.
You know what? I think that's actually quite a strong position to take, because I'm sure when people, like, the perception is when you get hired is that, hey, we're the candidates, that kind of thing. So, like, did you have it in your own mind before you started? Did you have it in your own mind that you were going to set aside time to manage expectations or what?
Yeah, for sure. And I think especially because it's a brand new industry, like quantum engineering and IC engineers I've never hired before in my life. So I definitely, did a bit of sourcing as well before, the last few weeks, just because I need to understand how the market works. But, if they're relying on one or two agencies, it's not broken. I'm not going to go in there and say, don't use them tomorrow. Like, continue the pipeline. Let me settle in a bit more. And then, let's kind of figure out what we need to do. So, yeah, why fix it when it's not broken?
I think okay. So there's number one learning from us, which is going to be probably tweet number one in this Twitter thread I will one day put together, is like resist the urge to just scrap everything. Because I do think a lot of us feel like we need to go out and make impact and everything's wrong. We have to be the person that fixes everything. Well, actually, if there's a system ongoing, even if it's an inefficient system, it's going to be a little bit more efficient at this moment than what you could implement straight away, because you need ramp up time. Exactly. So you've got to figure out what is working okay, maybe a few fires you've got to put out immediately. But let's have a look at what is happening. Okay, keep that ticking over and then go have this period where you could do research and figure out what's right or wrong. Yeah. Okay, very, very good. Okay, let's bring on some of our guests, Christine. Keep on contributing, Mo. You've got a kind of a weird role today because you've got to be the
I'm here to learn.
The co-host, but you know, I don't want you to think, oh, I'm a co-host, I can't actually volunteer my opinion. So so please go and contribute to this. So who do we say? We're going to say Akbar first, right? Akbar and
Andrea. And
Andrea, yeah. So let's bring Akbar and Andrea on. I think that's Andrea. Yes, it is. See, Andrea, you need to really put your second name in. She's got like a quite unusual first name spelling, so I think that's right. One of these days I'm gonna invite someone who isn't the right person, and they'll appear on screen, and it's like she's gotta roll with it. Do you know what I mean? That's okay. Here we go. Oh, a simultaneous. Here we go. So, okay, let's say hello to these two fine people. Akbar, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What is you do, sir?
Yeah, hi guys. I am the head of talent here at Storyblock. We are a startup that is the headless CMS, 19 different nationalities, living in 14 countries, fully remote.
Fantastic stuff. Good to see you back, Akbar, mate. And good to see you actually, as it's only been a couple of weeks since RepFest, hasn't it? So, yeah, excellent stuff. And Andrea, welcome to the Brain Food Live. I think your debut. Who are you and what it is you do?
Thank you. I'm Andrea, you just said it. I recently joined Wayfair as a lead talent partner for all the engineering management and senior engineering management tracks here. I've been a bit around in the industry, but mostly tech. I'm unfortunately not as experienced as the other guests here, but really
happy. No. It always feel better about being less experienced. It just means we're old, you know? I don't want to have 20 years experience. Believe me, I don't. This is not a good thing. Okay, let's go to this question. Both of you started kind of a new job fairly recently. When you kind of entered day one, like, can you tell us actually what your emotions were? Let's dive into some of this, like, more intangible things. Like, when you started for the first time, when you're onto the Slack channel and starting to meet people digitally or virtually, whatever. How did you feel about it? What was your sense of feeling? Let's go with you first, Akbar.
Well, I've been flirting with Storyblock for like a year and a half now. So I was advising them when they were in an accelerator program. So I was like, yes, great. I can be super, super hands-on when I started in January. But then I kind of had two first 100 days because right in the middle, I stopped for my paternity leave. So I was able to compare what did I do in January, what did I do when I came back in late April.
Right. Well, tell us about that, Akbar. It's an interesting journey, isn't it? Where you already had some prior knowledge, quite intimate knowledge, actually, because you were the person giving them input, advice and so on before you went in deeper. So that's a kind of an interesting experience to be part of. Maybe actually ideal circumstance, isn't it? Because you've got a taste of the culture. You understand who the people are, maybe early sight of the problems as well, of course. So yeah.
Well, Christine and you guys, you mentioned it. Don't need to go there and try and fix something that ain't broke. It'd be very cheeky of me, Stephen Mark, after saying using this ATS to be like, no, this is awful. So it allowed me to focus on hire super early because there was a foundation in place and great people that I knew and had a relationship with.
Yeah, so there's one step. Like, if things are working, even if it's suboptimal, it may just give you this groundwork to get on with a lot of the recruiting stuff. That's bottom line. That's what you're there for. Andrea, go to you. Different situation, all the same. I think you knew a lot of people from previous employers at Wayfair, but a different organization still. How did you feel when you started kind of day one with those folks?
Well, the first thing was, it was remote, all remote, which I've never done before. So that was anxiety inducing because I didn't really know how this is going to work out. Is charisma coming through well through this camera? What am I going to do? What am I going to say? Who am I going to meet? How much time can I spend in front of my laptop every day without having my eyes bleeding out? So that was the first thing, right? Quite anxious with regards to the remote onboarding. Other than that, it was also a bit funny because I've spent previously around 6 years with Zalando, and of course, Wayfair and Zalando, they are quite big competitors in the Berlin market. So I quite knew a few people there trying to poach them, or just people who maybe moved from my previous company there. And it was quite good in a way, because I could maybe easily connect with some people and share some stories and get some learning. But definitely, I think from a feeling perspective, because you asked about that, it was this anxiety of how am I going to do it remote? I can't go to the office. I can't meet anybody. But I think that's over now. I think we really nailed it. I was very happy to see that I wasn't overwhelmed. You know, when you're afraid, like, oh my God, I will have my calendar packed. It wasn't the case. So I really appreciated that. It's proper onboarding in that regard. And I had time to speak to everybody, like Christina was mentioning, right? You just spend your time getting to know people.
You know, let's talk about this sort of change of experience from the onboard. So everyone's like onboarding remotely. That may actually be a lot like a future, how we do things, right? I can totally imagine that being persistent, even if companies do decide to be in office a period of time. How much of the pressure is for you to sort out your calendar? Or is it from did you find it was a structured thing to say, hey, here's what you're doing, and like it's all nailed down and you just like go through it? Or was it a case where you had to actually reach out to people and say, listen, we need to do this? How was that experience for you guys?
If I may, yeah, for me, it was funny because I thought initially, oh, great, I don't have my calendar packed. What a change of scenery. And I was like, okay, but now what? So what do I do now? And I had this feeling like I have to constantly ask what's next. And I thought, hold on a minute. I've been doing this for long enough. Let me see what people we have here. Who do I have to speak to? And just go and just say, knock on their door and say, hi, I'm here. I know you don't know me. I don't know you, but I would like to. So it was really just doing that, and quite a bit of that in the first weeks. I'm still doing it in all fairness. But it was interesting because I didn't have anybody telling me, you go there and do this or that. So just owning it, I think.
I think that might be quite common I would say, certainly I would guess in your case, Akbar, yeah, you're coming in as the only recruiter at that time, I assume.
Yeah.
They may not know what you need to know, or they may not know what it is that you require. So it's kind of, you've got to be very self-directed at this moment and have the confidence to reach out to people. Quick question to all of you. Does it make sense to send like a massive big bang message to everyone and say, yo, I'm here, we're doing this? Yeah. Or do you go one-to-one or one-to-one? Like, what is the mechanism here?
So I use x.ai, which is kind of like Calendly. And we've got our Slack channel. And we've got a specific announcements one. So go on there, introduce yourself and add the link in. And then the first week, all of my meetings were kind of blobbed in with people. And then every hiring manager, I said, when do you want to do our regular weekly thing? And then that's gave me the cadence of meeting loads of people early in the beginning and having ongoing conversations booked for people who are going to be hiring in the company.
Cool. Let me just dive a little bit deeper onto that approach, Akbar. When you sent that message with your calendar link, like, did you like add a persuader to the hiring managers to say, listen, do you need my help? If so, book some time. Otherwise, you know what I mean? Bottom of the queue.
A little bit assumptive with the hiring managers, because it was like, I'm here as your recruiter. I'm sure you don't want to be recruiting. Lydia, my VP of Ops, she was absolutely amazing and had taken us from 9 to 24. And me starting, I had to go from 24 to 75. So there were going to be loads of conversation needed. So I was like, when do you want to do this? Not do you want to do this?
Presumptive close. I love it. Go on, Christine. You're about to say something, I think.
Yeah, I was going to add in that as well. Like, did you feel like you also had to sell a lot of kind of what you were doing and what talent was doing? Like, how did you get the buy-in as well in that particular conversation? Or was it in the copy?
The leadership team in the company just obsessed with hiring. I 2 days ago, our VP of marketing was interviewed about the content strategy. Last 4 minutes, all he did was talk about his team, culture and talent. So I'm really lucky. I landed in a soft spot. And being a business of our size after Series A, what we're going to do with that money is literally use it to accelerate the team. Mm-hmm. So front of mind why we were scaling.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We're starting to get there. I think, you know, this idea of putting talent as the top priorities shifted from being a pretty much a rhetorical sort of exercise to people actually truly believing that's the case. I think COVID-19 has definitely helped. You know, the recognition that, you know, companies are ultimately collections of people, and we need to do a better job of recruiting them. Maybe recruiting gets easier as a result. Like this idea of having to persuade people that it's an important function, is that still as necessary as it was? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I would say, so if you have a business, again, back to my VP of operations, so our hiring plan was semi-ready, set in place. Our number at the end of the year wasn't an accident. And every VP or head of kind of knew that number there. So, and also people were just doing so much amazing work and I didn't know how they were having the time. So the energy of like, I'm sure you want a specialist doing this while you're doing less of this. I'm lucky, really, really lucky. That's all I can say.
I think it's so different, right, with the different size of organizations. I'm listening to you talk about it and I think, oh, that's so cool. Here, I couldn't email 17,000 people. So sometimes I wish I could. but it's true. I think Danielle was saying in the chat, right, that you just send an email, introduce yourself and just tell them, look, I really want to know about what you're doing. And then it also, for me, it helped me gauge a bit the culture of the organization, mm-hmm. because I did expect, in all fairness, some pushback or, oh, I don't have time for this, I don't have time for that. I was expecting it. I didn't get it. And I was like, okay, that's surprising. They really made time, which was obviously something which I highly appreciate because it shows that they put emphasis on hiring. But it also helps, at least in my case, because it's maybe a larger organization, to have a bit of sponsorship, right? So you meet a person or two, maybe even your lead, and they make a bit of introduction for you as well, paving a bit the road. So like you're not completely an alien for everybody. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction to make, Andrea. Thank you for that, because obviously the maturation of the company is going to determine how effective that approach is. So I think you're working for it with a much bigger organization, more mature down the road, bigger TA teams, and your responsibilities are narrower, right? Whereas Akbar's doing the entire thing, you're like looking at a segment. So a massive blast out message to everybody is probably not the right approach. You have to be more targeted, at least to, you know, the audience that you're addressing, particularly the hiring managers, I guess, particularly.
I'll take what Steve is saying over there, that they'll sleep better at night. You know what? This is a great selling point because you see them coming in the calls 9 a.m. in the morning, sleepless night. It's great. I'll just use that.
You know what? That's a good point, because recruiting is hard, and unless you are a specialist, I find most people don't enjoy it. There's very few. I mean, cycling through, like, in my own mind's eye, but hiring managers and leaders that I've interacted with, some of them totally are into it. Like they enjoy this aspect of the job, but most kind of do it as a thing because they need to build a team and they actually have what they think is their proper job and they want to get on with that. So, you know, I think definitely if you can present your service and your presence as a way to make them successful and to reduce their workload, then that should be a very good way to open the first door. Okay, let's talk about sort of some kind of self-objective, so to speak. When you kind of, I don't know about you, but when you start a new job, there's always stuff that you have in your mind to say, look, I'm going to knock this out in this way. What were those things in your mind before day one? And did they change as you go through the process? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, one of the things that I noticed, that I think our gender balance was very much like the industry. We were a tech-centric startup, and that was the number one focus, was could we get more women or people who are not identifying as men to final stage? So we're already at 24%, which is good but not great, and now that number begins with a 3 over the last 6 months. That's what I had my eye on when I first started.
So one of the key sort of objectives you had was to improve the diversity in the tech group at final interview stage. So some good measurements there. Yeah, perfect. How about you, Andrea? Anything that you just kind of walked in and thought, right, this is one of the things we can do? I mean, not only is it positive for the business, but I'm also thinking, you know, we have our own personal brand also to maintain. Like one of the worst things I think that can happen for a new starter in any role is if people start beginning to doubt, let's say, you know, whether that's the right hire or where's the production and all this type of stuff. So you need to kind of get an early win in there. What did you have in mind? Was something you thought, right, this could be something that's doable?
Yeah, I had two things in mind. One is something that I'm trying to write this blog post. I'm terrible, probably queen of procrastination. I'm sure I butchered that word, but anyway. So that was one thing. It's unlearning everything I knew from before, because I was nearly sure I would go with, oh my God, I've done so much before. I will just take everything with me and repeat. I've been successful once, I'll do it again. And then I thought, I really have to get out of this mindset. First of all, and second thing, in my case, I took over a horizontal line of roles, the management and senior management for engineering. And the first thing I thought about is, okay, processes, right? We want to grow. We are already really big. We want to grow quite a lot. Processes. The first thing that I thought is, how am I going to work around this? What do we have in place? And how are we going to make this streamlined? How are we going to make it sustain our future growth? So I guess that's the first thing I looked at, and I try to, let's say, get sponsorship here and there from the stakeholders to try and see who can be my ally, because I will never be able to do it alone. It's also interesting being a global organization, because you have to, you can't just make decisions in Europe. You have to rely on the US. So it's a lot of back and forth. For me, these were quite new. And these are the things that are still on my very big to-do list.
Again, I mean, I think it does matter. The more I speak to you guys, the more obvious it is that you have to be very aware of the context of your business. And what is a good idea in one context could be a not so good idea in a different one. You know, you mentioned already size and scale, but also international dimension, for instance. So, you know, suddenly you can't be making decisions that you think are locally amazing, but he's going to encounter this kind of resistance in this type of office, and politically that might be difficult for you to get through. So super, super interesting. That audit period, though, that period where you're trying to figure stuff out, like, how do you go about doing that? That seems to me like a job itself, like a significant task, but I don't see that anybody's been trained on how to do that. It's like, oh, go audit the process. How do I do that? You know? Any thoughts on this? Christine, you as well, because you're kind of in the middle of this, aren't you?
Right? Yeah, I mean, keen to learn from everyone else. I mean, I was very lucky, I think, at the FT. My then manager was a global head of L&D. So she said, do a, you know, chat to everyone, pull out the qualitative and quantitative data, and then do a SWOT analysis. It was basically how she already kind of gave me the whole kind of strategy in a way. So yeah, I mean, I literally just kind of went in there and said, you know, what went well and what doesn't go so well with respect to recruiting. So I think ultimately, by the time you speak to, or the similar position as Andrea, when you speak to about 10 people, you start to see the same patterns, right? Okay, yeah. We're not hiring enough female engineers. We are, our time to hire is too long. So, you know, you start to identify what those core challenges are, and then you can start fixing it. But I don't know whether there's a right way or a wrong way. I think the SWOT analysis might be a bit too kind of management consultancy, if you will. But, you know, it's not something I'm training in the past. But really, it was just asking the right questions, I think.
No, but I think that's really great that they gave you a framework, though. Because one of the things that recruiters typically don't have is any of this, like, tooling, you know, the concepts, the tools. A great thing about management consulting is at least you get trained in different tools you could use to move it from just having casual conversations. And I think a lot of people who are starting maybe jobs for the first time do understand that they need to get information out of people. But how do you do that in a structured way so that you can actually step back from it and see, okay, here's, we can see some trends that are going on that are going to cause us problems if we continue to do them. Keeping with this audit, when do you know when to stop? Is there a point where you think, okay, I've got enough information for now, and now we actually need to get on with it? Or is it, how do you know when is a good time to shift focus away from collecting the information?
Is there ever a time where you know enough?
I think I'm in agreement there. I've picked at our process 2-3 times over since I've been there. There's now what was like, you have to do this, is now been scrapped, and other things that we've kind of reintroduced. But when I first started, I was looking, I was like, what is a good way to bring down our time to hire? Mm. Maybe have only one person delivering the offer. I thought that was a good idea, but then I got feedback, really direct feedback, where it's like, Akbar, we actually want you in the room. So then, okay, that's me adding to the schedule. Maybe we're going to speak 3 days later. That's something that was totally not working. We're always picking at it. I would suggest at the beginning, do the candidate journey for yourself with an incognito tab and ask your loved one to try find your job somewhere to really see where what is some of the rub points before they even come into your ATS as well.
Okay, so some really good, Steve, yes, and please share it in the chat stream, sir. So going into this topic, I love the language you're using there, Akbar, picking at the process. So it may be that you don't need to think, you've done the audit, now you're going to roll out an entirely new process. That just may just be a huge chew of a project. Whereas maybe what you want to do is kind of do a spot check on a certain area, perhaps link to your own journey and recognize it as a candidate and recognize, you know what, that was a little bit rough. And then you can say, we're going to try and fix that. And it may just be this incremental improvements that you do in different areas of the recruiting process. I think that's a viable technique. Okay, cool. Listen, time is moving on real quick, folks. So I just wanted to ask a couple of questions to close with Andrea and Akbar. Firstly, what do you think is, how would you advise someone who's starting a job for the new time? I think Daniela is saying she's going to start soon next month. Like, what does she need to do that you now know, having gone through your own process? Like, the thing that you would recommend to another person who's going to enter this experience? Go with you on this, Andrew.
Okay, that's putting you on the spot. I was thinking, going through my head, can I go back on one of your questions? Because I had something to say and I didn't have the chance to put my hands up. You know, it was about this, how do you think what's best to do and prioritize? And if I may, I have one recommendation of a book which I went through in my time between the jobs, which is called For Your Improvement. It's a book which is this thick. It's used by the management at Apple. Every manager that goes through from an individual contributor to manager at Apple, they have to go through this. It's a humongous thing. I recommend it to everybody. And it teaches you about prioritization of stuff. So super well done, super well written. And it's a Bible, I think, business-wise. Advice, I think.
Oh, hang on. Maybe that is advice. Like, you should get educated on prioritization. So it would be cool to share the link into that chat stream as well when you have Andrea. But go ahead, finish the thought there.
And the second thing, I think, but this is more from a personal perspective. If you're anything like me, I'm one of those that wants to run before they can walk. I have really short legs as well, which makes it pretty tough. So then give yourself really time because they aren't there to chase you. They've been newbies at some point themselves. They remind them of that. I did, even if I'm working with people who have been here for 10 years. And so, you know, remember that day 10 years ago when you were a newbie? And that's me. So, and use humor. For me, that works a lot. If you make them laugh, they give you a pass a little bit, right? Take it with a pinch of salt. So
don't take yourself too seriously, I guess. Like, ultimately, you're there to help. You want to help. They want you to succeed. You got to think that's true. Look at these problems as addressable challenges rather than stuff that's going to be, you know, crushing in terms of intimidation. Okay, bit of advice, Akbar, how would you advise, let's say, using Daniela as an example, if she's going to start a new job next month, what's your advice to her as a new recruiter, as a recruiter in a new company?
So look at what jobs you think are going to be slam dunk and easy for you, and go through your first contacts and people that you know and prep them for that call. That starting with momentum is super easy when you've got, I know these people. When you first start, just onboard yourself as the salesperson or the marketer or the tech person that you're going to hire. So you kind of know and you can predict some of the questions. Our VP of sales I can literally be a salesperson for our product now, how detailed his one was. And that helps me kind of fake it until I make it in this very weird technical industry I'm in. So would be use the documentation that you're going to give your candidates if they're successful anyway, and look for easy wins from your first person network.
Okay, I think that's an underrated comment because it is one of those where you almost need to give yourself space to work. So in football analogies, like, it's all very well playing like tiki-taka, but you've got to also put your foot in early, establish a bit of respect so that you can actually have the space to play. And I think that's true for any type of job. Look for a quick win, basically, nail it, and then that gives you a bit of respect to be able to move around a bit more. That may just give you maybe that's particularly important if there is, you know, different types of characters around that are looking for those signals. So I guess play it by ear, but I'm sure there'll be opportunities for you to make like quick visible impact. Okay, cool. But as a danger though, you can be sucked into the recruiting aspect super quickly and not be able to look at the wider picture if you don't understand that that's the project. So in other words, make sure you don't end up just scrambling around and not fixing the bigger problems. Okay, cool. Akbar and Andrea, we're gonna have to say goodbye now because we've got to bring on Steve and Anastasia. So really good having you two on the show. Great to see you, you guys. I'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's great speaking to smart folks, eh? Don't you think?
Yeah, I'm smart there. Definitely. I'm making a note just to buy this book, but it's definitely quite pricey, as mentioned. But definitely one on my reading list.
How much are we talking? What's 100 quid or something?
About, I'd say it's 90 US. So yeah, I guess that's like £70.
Yeah, that's pricey. That's pricey. Yeah, it's probably has a molecule of Steve Jobs' blood in it or something. what we need is someone to buy it and then, you know, reprint it. There she is, Anastasia. How are you doing?
Great. So great to be back. And
no,
thanks for
great,
having me here.
Great to see you. And in between, Anastasia, you've actually become a mum, haven't you? So great. Yeah, welcome back to Brain Food Live. Congrats on the new job. Congrats on the growing family. So awesome stuff.
Thanks a lot. So yeah, a lot of things have changed since I was here for the last time. But again, thank you and excited about our chat today.
Indeed. Let's introduce ourselves. So Steve, welcome to the show. Also, let's go with you first, Steve. Who are you? What is you do?
Well, I'm blowing away the notion that you're hiring smart people on your chat. That's a whole other story.
Steve, your volume's a bit low there, man. Do you want
to try? I'm going to wrap it up. Give me a second.
Okay, while Steve's doing that, Anastasia, can you introduce? Say again.
Is this any better?
A little bit. I think we could still use a bit of a bump.
I'll take care of it.
Anastasia, okay, cool. Anastasia, do you want to quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What is you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've recently joined a full remote company, as you can tell by its name, and I'm leading the entire recruiting team. So I'm a senior recruiting manager here, 6 weeks in. It feels like I've already passed this like 100-day mark. I only realized it today when I was like literally counting the weeks that I'm halfway through. So yeah, we are going through a stage of hypergrowth, a lot of learnings, a lot of things to do. And I came to remote from GitLab. So that's briefly about me.
Yeah, fantastic. And really interesting circumstance, which may change how recruiters need to behave in this hypergrowth situation. I think remote.com obviously are clearly in that position where loads of things are happening. Steve, are you with us, man?
I think that is better.
But I think it's okay. It's okay. It's fine. Don't worry about it. I think it could be optimized, but don't worry.
I will use my outdoor voice.
Okay, so Steve, quickly introduce yourself, man.
My name is Steve Levy. I am an engineer that brought over to the dark side many decades ago. I've been involved in the industry, the digital aspect of recruiting from the beginning, original member of VRE. If anyone knows about ATAP, Association of Talent Acquisition Professionals, I'm one of the founders. It's a new organization, everyone. I'm also one of the founders. And what makes this really fun, Hung, is while this is about the first 100 days, I actually didn't make it 100 days at Amazon.
No.
I made it 90. Which is a really good topic.
Right. I didn't know that. This is exciting. This is exciting. Okay, well, let's just...
There's some good things to talk about.
Well, Steve, let's just go straight there. You were in the business for that period of time. like, how did it play out? I mean, Amazon is also a different type of business. Not every company is Amazon. So we have to take mm-hmm. that with a kind of a caveat to say, look, some of the things that Steve had to do there maybe are going to be different. But was it a case you were just dropped in and say, look, just go, we need 40 people every day kind of thing? Or did you have some room to change things and do stuff?
Well, I wasn't dropped in. And to be very fair, I have a long history with many of the leaders at Amazon. Friends of mine, you and my train, some of them, folks in the UK, you know very well. I won't drop their names out. And, you know, I was brought in. There were some challenges. There's a big ramp up there. Like every other large technology company, they have been impacted substantially by the pandemic. And, the line of thinking was, I've got very solid ties to technical communities. I don't have to learn engineering. I don't have to learn technology. Amazon is very process-based. And, you know, so my first really good solid 4 to 6 weeks is learning the process, mm-hmm. learning the systems, you know, identifying the good, the bad, the ugly, what is easy to work with, what is not so easy to work with.
In this context, Steve, was it a case that there was like documentation for you to pick up from a recruiting point of view?
Yeah. Amazon is filled with documentation. And there are guidelines, there are wikis. If you're looking for, you know, a place to go, there, it's there.
Yeah,
you're finding it.
Okay, Steve, we're getting some audience complaints about the audio, man.
I will talk to you and say that I'm gonna come back with a different.
Yeah, mic. What I'm gonna do is kick you out, man, and then you indicate to me on the chat stream when you're back on, and maybe we even lose the headset. We could do it that way. Okay, cool. We'll see you back there, Steve. Tom, I think you're right. don't worry. Sometimes this happens. It's a live show, folks. We're going to roll with it. Anastasia, let's go to you. Different situation because remote.com, obviously, I think you just raised like $100 million or whatever. It's a huge amount of money. You've been brought in to do a rapid scale up. How is that? What kind of things do you need to do? Do you have a sense that you need to do some early like wins quickly? Or how did you approach this?
Yeah, that's a great question because, again, you know, it's whenever a company is getting like a new round of funding, usually recruiting is the first team who would feel it because this means that we are bringing more hires. We need more people. We need to iterate mm-hmm. on our product and make it even more awesome. So definitely we need to make a lot of like quick wins. Together with that, if you think about remote, we went through this journey of becoming a unicorn only in 2 years, which means that we need to build a foundation. And mm-hmm. I would say that for us as the recruiting team, probably this is the number one priority because, again, there are so many tempting things like talent branding, diversity, and so many projects that are always on top of our mind and we constantly talk about them. But at the same time,
how do you prioritize?
You've
got a huge fundraise. Oftentimes when there's lots of investment, it's like, hey, do what you need to do, Anastasia. And it's like, okay, crap, I got too many choices. Like, how do you decide what to do first? Because you don't have, you know, 24 hours in a day, you don't have 25 hours in a day, you just got to roll with it. So,
and also, how many roles are you hiring for right now? It'll be good to get an idea. How many roles are you hiring for?
That's the question that I'm still trying to figure out. But I would say that like we are at almost 300 employees right now, mm-hmm. and I can see us easily doubling in size by the end of the year. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's definitely intense. So in terms of prioritizing, I'm definitely spending a lot of time on talking to hiring managers and understanding the priorities. Because again, the recruiting team is growing, but there is only that much we can do, even if we work 24 hours a day. So I always come to these calls, which actually I set up as coffee chats. We were discussing this before, like how we can force our hiring leaders to jump on a call. I actually never ask whether they would like or not to jump on a call with me. I just go ahead, schedule a call and call it a coffee chat. And then we just accidentally slip into work. Mm-hmm. So Yeah, figuring out priorities.
Let's just stop on there, because that's one of the things that we've heard more than once. Like, presumption is important, because if you give people options and say, oh, are you free to do it this, you know, they then need to think about a time, and then it's never going to be convenient. It'll take ages doing chasing. Just block book it in and say, look, we need to talk about this. Can I grab 30 minutes and then just slap it in there? So I think getting that meeting time with busy people is actually important, not only to get information back, but also to establish a relationship of equity with the hiring manager. If you're always asking, is it okay? Suddenly you're a bit of a supplicant. And that's no bueno for what you need to do, because you need to actually operate equitably on that. Steve, you're back. Can you give us a shot with the audio?
Test. Is this? Can you hear it now?
Yeah. Oh my God, the crystal clear, dulcet tones of Steve.
And to all the nice people in the chat, yeah, I got this from Amazon. So
that's awesome. Great to hear you clearly, Steve. That's great.
Thanks. No, but to go back to just to rehash, Amazon. I have a long history with many of the leaders there, many of the recruiters there. Past, present, and likely future ones, because, you know, of all those recruiter openings, recruiters in the world, many of them are going to end up at Amazon. It's just the way it is. Plenty of documentation on how to do things. My strength, and this was known, is that you put me right in with the hiring managers, and let's look at their problems. I was typing in the chat that, you know, the way I look at my role in a technology organization is helping managers sleep better at night. Because there's not a single manager that isn't, you know, especially in a tech org, especially, you know, Christina, what you're doing in quantum engineering is just wow stuff. And it's all new. They're waking up and they're going, how the hell am I going to get this stuff delivered if I don't have the right people to do it? Where are these people? And, you know, so, you know, part of it is getting in the conversation. I was thrown into those conversations right away with the HMs. So, you know, so the engagement piece is so important. They get comfortable right away going, oh, this is different. This is a different approach than I've ever had before. You know, bringing them insights into talent mapping, talent density, what's really out there, what's really going on within the communities. And it doesn't have to be tech, but showing them things, showing them, you know, open source sites, showing them blogs, showing them this and that, and going, what's your opinion on this? It seems to me that based on what you're trying to accomplish, these things might be of interest. And so those are the quick wins.
Okay, Steve, I want to just jump right in there, because that's an important point I just want to isolate for people who are listening. Essentially, be very open with your own approach and your own technique and your own ideas with the hiring manager, so that they can understand the work and your thinking as to how you're dealing with it. It's not a case of just saying, oh, here's the candidates. Like, show your methodology, show your ideology, like what is your philosophy about recruiting these folks, and then get them to understand this is how they've got to go and do it. And it also established a bit of respect in terms of the job. Like, I remember an old manager, like old trainer of mine, he said, you got to sell the pain. Like, sometimes you got to show them the work. You can't just deliver the candidates, because they may just assume this guy just got it like off an ad or whatever. No, it's like, you got to show them, this is the amount of work it takes, and, you know, educate them on this. By the way, engineers have exactly the same challenge. It's not just about producing an application or a solution. If you show your customer the work that's gone into it, whether your customer is a part of a business person or an external customer, that's going to help them value what you're doing a lot more and respect you when you're doing that effort. Okay, let's keep going with regards to this concept of prioritization. So there's 150 things to do. You have to prioritize. Prioritization is only a thing when there are really, like, seriously, like, two very close competing things. Don't tell me, yeah, priority is this and everything else is easy. I get it. Those circumstances exist. Sometimes it's like you got to do one or the other. That's the deal. How do you make that call? How do you decide which one to do? Anastasia, go with you on this.
Yeah, so for me, prioritization goes hand in hand with assessing your risks. So for me, like, I always try to assess what would be the risk of me not doing this or of us not accomplishing this as a team. So for me, that's probably like the easiest and the shortest answer. So I mean, like, if you can leave without doing this, like for the next few days, weeks, months, so this is the way you can prioritize it.
So you've got to kind of have some, how do you projection? You got to project forward to say, if this is not done or not happening, what is the downstream impacts of this? And is this going to be like seriously problematic? So, okay, that's, I think, a really good way, at least the technique of doing, of reprioritizing. How about you, Steve? How do you prioritize between competing must-dos, you know?
Well, to take Andrea's point and take it up a couple of levels, ultimately it goes to, what's best for business, which has the most positive, it's a balance, positive short-term, positive long-term, deleterious short-term, deleterious long-term. It's, to your point, Christine, it's a SWOT analysis. It's, what you may end up having to do, especially if you're dealing with competing hiring managers, is take it up one level or two levels and let the referee decide which ones are prioritized. Now, you know, and it may end up coming down to a 1A, 1B, which then comes to how do you schedule your work for the day? You may have to say, well, I'm going to do on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm going to work on these. Mm-hmm. Tuesday and Friday, I'm going to work on these. But ultimately, when it comes to prioritizing things that are with different people, I think the most important thing to do is to get those two people together and let them understand what's taking place. So, because at some point down the line, the roles are going to switch. And so it's like being a parent to a couple of triplets or quintuplets, all who are, or maybe a litter of puppies and whatever it might be. That's what managers like, not in a negative way, but they're cute and furry, but you know, they all want your time and, you know, you have to make that clear as to what can and cannot be done.
Yeah, I get this. So in the context of, let's say, competing hiring demands, you have hiring manager A and hiring manager B both like shouting at you to say, look, this needs to be top priority. You need to make the assessment based on business need. But if it's still a case where, you know, they're jawing at you, you get them both in the room and say, listen, we're going to hash this out and this is how we're going to do it. And I think, you know, that's a way in which you could, I wouldn't say get rid of this pressure, but you shouldn't be absorbing that. You know, they're the ones creating it. They need to share the responsibility for solving it. Okay, very, very cool. All right, let's have a look at sort of things that you need to have done. I mean, Steve, I'm going to go with you on this because you've actually completed 90 days within Amazon. How would you describe, I think, you know, unless people have catastrophically not sort of worked out and what have you, most people leave jobs with a view of, look, yeah, this worked and this didn't. In a short time frame of 100 days, you know, 3 months or whatever, what kind of things need you have done as a recruiter for you to be able to walk away and say, you know what, I'm a plus there rather than a minus?
Well, I still think I was a plus there. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to, I've been doing this for 37 years. I know what I like and I know what I don't like. And you know, and everyone's going to get to that point where they're going to be able to make that decision financially, intellectually, professionally, and be comfortable with it. But ultimately, you know, I think the important things are, if someone would like you're asking me, these are the things that I need to know going into any situation, any organization, any scenario, in no special order. I want to know what metrics are in place. What does the dashboard look like? How is the data collected? You know, how is it used? You know, if they're still using cost per hire, well, you know, I know I'm going to be in for a challenging time because, in my opinion, cost per hire isn't a really valid recruiting metric. I want to know what systems are in place. I want to know, are they, you know, what do people think of them? Good, bad, and ugly. You know, if is you know, can I do things like drip campaigns easily? you know, if I can't, well, you know, then I'm going to have to, you know, do a lot of stuff in Microsoft, in the Microsoft Office suite, and tracking things are going to be a challenge. So I have to, going to have to orient my thinking and, you know, maybe bring in some technology, you know, maybe up that Trello subscription, whatever it might be. And, you know, then depending on the most important thing, some of you know me, I'm an intake person and a very strategic intake person. I want to know how hiring managers, what their relationships have been like with recruiters before me, what worked, what didn't work, you know, how do they like being, you know, catered to, if you will. And, you know, these are just, you know, the three core areas. Metrics, what does success look like? Is there are there SLAs in place? You know, are they be honest, are they realistic or not? You know, systems, you know, if they have systems in place that you've worked with in the past that you know are going to make you lose your hair, well, you got to be prepared to lose more hair. And finally, you know, you need to know what it is they ultimately want to do. What's the value proposition? Because everybody wants somebody from one of these big major companies to come on board. And you have to be able to, you know, have the conversation with the manager. Well, why would somebody leave a perfectly good job at one of these companies and come to you? What will they be doing here that they won't be doing there?
You know what, Steve, you said so many interesting things there, particularly one of the things I think is definitely true is that you have to understand what sort of, let's look at the tooling and technology. You have to kind of understand what they've committed to as a business. And that this should have happened, obviously, before you have onboarded, before you even signed the contract. You need to know what they're using. Because if they're using something and it's embedded in their business and you can't get it out, and you know that this is going to be like every time you switch this on, you're going to hate yourself, that's probably not the right place. So that's something I think is definitely worth qualifying. Maybe understanding what the tech stack is, the tooling stack that's in place based on previous usage of, you know, other recruiters making it in, and then figuring out which one is relevant. I love also the idea of, you know, what is the previous history they have in recruiting? You know, what's the relationship you have with the people and the function of recruiting? Because sometimes you find hiring managers, maybe they've had a negative experience and that carries over because that's confirmed in their own kind of views of what recruiters are. And then you need a different tactic or a different strategy to handle that. Go Anastasia to you with this. You're only, 50 days in. What has been the most satisfactory thing that you've done in 50 days? And what do you need to do in the next 50 days before you can say, you know what, that 100 days, I think I'm doing okay?
Yeah, so I believe that like in this first 50 days, we cleaned up together with the team a lot of like inefficiencies in our processes. And these are very small tweaks, for example, in ATS, like introducing stage automations, auto rejections and stuff on every role. But again, this makes such a big impact, especially after the Unicorn announcement, when you have like thousands of people applying to your roles. So these quick wins are definitely very helpful. Together with that, I believe that managing expectations of the hiring leaders is another win. I feel that like we are aligned. We know that the recruiting team is understaffed as well as the whole company, but we know that the help is on the way. We know that we need to manage expectations, set our priorities, and then slowly but steadily we'll get to the numbers that we need to achieve. So together with that, whenever I'm talking to hiring managers, I would say that it's really important for me to kind of undercommit but overperform. This is like the motto that I learned in management consulting, but it sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but I believe it's truly important when you start at a new place. So you're not trying to tell that you can achieve everything in one go. So you come up with very realistic and at the same time, like visible and measurable goals that really make an impact. And then if you have a bandwidth and time to do more, it will always come up like as a huge win because no one expects this. So I would say that I believe like we are doing pretty well as a team in terms of managing expectations, making some like changes in our processes, streamlining those. And then like in the next, let's say 50 days, we can focus on more strategic things like working on the onboarding for the recruiters who will join our team, making sure that they are set up for success from the early beginning, kind of like all the lessons that I learned and trying like to put in this onboarding. Together with that, we are working on like interview training. So kind of like bigger projects that takes a like more time and thought. So, but again, like they're pretty easily achievable, like over the course of like 1 quarter or like 100 days.
Yes. You know what? Go ahead, Christine, go ahead.
Sorry, I wasn't getting all the process right. I think that really resonated with me. My pre-agency days, we used to overpromise and underdeliver. So, you know, I remember cringing at that thought. So actually spinning it around and actually not overcommitting and making sure you do a good job. I think that's, that's really lovely. I actually forgot about that term, but that really resonated with me.
But you know what? Because all of us do come from recruitment agency background, I think. We're mistrained to overpromise, to close the deal, etc. Yeah,
we'll do it.
Go to Andrea's term earlier. Yeah, got to unlearn that. Get that out of your DNA. Once you've moved in-house, that's the worst thing you can do is to say, yeah, we're going to deliver this. And then obviously you're working on making it happen. Okay. Actually, I'm going to ask you the same question, Christine, because we're coming to the end of the show, and I wanted to just connect with you on this because you're obviously in kind of a similar boat. You're like 4 weeks in. What's the one thing you've done? You'd say, you know what? I'm happy with that as an achievement. And what needs to happen in the next, you know, 6-7 weeks going forward?
I'm definitely taking notes from everyone here today because I'm definitely still in my conversational mode. I think being able to kind of go back to leadership and say, you know, these are the key trends, and then get them to prioritize what really we should be focusing on. And actually also working out a budget, because I think at the moment it's very ad hoc. So, you know, working closely with them just to figure out, okay, well, what should we really be executing and focusing for the next 2 to 3 months? Cool. That's it.
And what about your, near-term objectives, like, okay, another 6 weeks down the line, where do you feel you should be as a recruiter or, you know, the organization as a recruiting organization?
Sure, that's a good question. I definitely think at least I should be on the phone and selling a few roles. I think the last couple of weeks are still just understanding really what we do as a company. So I'm not actually confident yet getting on the phone and pitching what we do to a brand new talent that I've never spoken to before. So I would definitely say for the next at least 30 to 60 days, I should be on that phone and also learning how to sell and pitch content motion to candidates and actually understanding and immersing myself to the world. I think back to what we were saying earlier about getting buy-in from software engineers, exactly the same thing. How do you get buy-in from this talent pool, this very specific talent pool? So,
well, that's another thing we haven't talked about, but probably as important, maybe it's something we could loop back to the previous sort of show. Like at what point does it make sense also to interact with the people you typically recruit for? You know, maybe you need to get involved in those communities early. You need to kind of learn from them as much as learn from inside, because yes, you're recruiting, you're representing your business, but you also got the opportunity to figure out what the brand perception is when you're interacting with other people. You can understand what other companies are doing in terms of hiring and techniques and stuff like this. So all of that I think is super useful. Okay, we're running over time, folks, so we're gonna have to say goodbye to Anastasia and Steve. Thank you so much for your time, guys. Really good seeing you both. Hopefully we'll get a chance to speak with you again soon. And good luck with what you're doing. Anastasia, great luck with what's happening with remote. Steve, let me know if there's anything needs to happen in terms of the next stages, man. We'll definitely.
I will have an announcement next week. Don't worry.
An announcement to make. You're gonna join the circus. You're gonna reinvent that industry.
I am a clown, so that might be appropriate. Yes.
Great stuff, Steve. I look forward to hearing what your next big move is, man.
I'll call you sometime.
Great. Thank you stuff. All.
Take Peace. Care, you two. Okay, wasn't that great? I really enjoyed that. Hey, by the way, folks, before I forget, and I probably should have done this in the middle of the show, but this is a new thing that's going to happen in Brain Food Live, because I've recognized that I know everybody and I'm like getting in contact with everybody from there. It's totally fine. But a lot of people in the crowd don't know each other. So we're going to have a little segment to say, now is your time. If you're still watching this, put your LinkedIn link into the chat stream. And I reckon we're going to keep that up there. And please connect with everyone else who watched the show, because you've got a person there that was equally interested in this concept and in this topic. And it might be something you want to pick up on with them later. You know, I'm going to send an email, I think, next week to follow up and say, hey, this is what's what. So all of the guest details are going to be on there. But the other viewers, the watchers out there. So put your links into the LinkedIn chat stream. Well done, Ivan. Make sure you connect with everyone here. Why not all be better connected? No reason why you guys should not be having or extending the conversation further if you felt that the 1 hour we've got is not sufficient. So, okay, good stuff, everybody. Right. So what's happening now, Christine?
Well, I'm dog sitting. So I'm earlier, I think Steve mentioned a puppy. So I was like, yeah, definitely just making sure he's okay, keeping a dog alive.
But the dog is actually very easy to maintain. It's like literally an exhausted chihuahua, isn't it?
Like, the smaller they are, the more energy they have, actually.
I don't think that's true for a chihuahua. Although, did you read that thing about kids? Probably a quack site, but it was like sciencealert.com or something. It was about how kids have like an extraordinary metabolism that's so different from adults that you might as well actually consider them a different species. And I thought, I can believe it. Parents, I'm sure, who are listening, yeah, can believe it. But that's a revelation. You know, maybe we should treat them as a different species.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that'd be better for them, better for us. Anyway, that's about it. I think that's the end of the show. So, Christine, thank you so much for joining us. Great to see you. And yeah, we'll catch up on other stuff because we've got other stuff to talk about, right? So,
cool. Thanks a lot, everyone. Have a nice weekend.
Okay. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention, next week what we're talking about. We have a very interesting show. Is it interesting? Think home what we're talking about. I actually can't remember. Follow the channel. You'll get updated as to what's happening next week. But we're back next Friday, as always. If you've enjoyed the show, follow the Crowdcast channel and you'll get notified as to what's up. All right, that's it, everybody. Have a good weekend.